Welcome to Reading the Game, the podcast where baseball fans discuss the baseball books they love. And this episode, we're going to be talking about an incredible book called The Incredible Women of the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League. And I'm delighted to be joined by Leslie Heafy. Hi, Leslie.
Hi.
And of course, by Phil. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Steve.
And this is the second time we're going to be talking about this. So we've literally just gone through this discussion with Leslie, and I forgot to press record. So apologies to listeners who imagine you'll never know this, but the first time we recorded this episode was really, really good, and I hope the second one's going to be just as good. Who knows? It might even be better than the first, but you'll never know. Why don't we crack on? Just giving a listen to the audio that I had from a talk with the author of the book, Anika Oreck, last week. I chatted to Anika for about half an hour about her book and how it came about and what's special about the book. It really is a special book. So we're going to listen to that first, and we'll come back and have a discussion. Hi, Anika. Thanks very much for joining us.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
No problem at all. I'm going to ask you, if it's not putting you on the spot too much, to talk a little bit about your favorite baseball book, because I think it's quite a nice icebreaker.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's see. It's hard to narrow down. There's so many great ones, but I think if I can cheat, there's a three-way tie between Boys of Summer by Roger Kahn, The Summer Game by Roger Angel, and Wait Till Next Year by Doris Kearns Goodwin. And I think if anyone who's read all three might sense that where my taste lies in baseball books. I love the nostalgic narrative intertwining of personal stories and baseball stories, and I just think they're lovely. That's the part of baseball I like.
definitely a theme to all of those, all fantastic books. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your work and how you came to write a book about the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League? Because there's not that many books about it, and I'd be really interested to hear how you came to it.
Sure. Well, I've been drawing my whole life and writing to some degree, and I've probably loved baseball about as long. but, you know, only recently, maybe in the past 7 or 8 years, I started kind of bringing the two together and started, you know, a lot of people go to baseball games and bring a scorebook and keep score, or, you know, they're having conversations with friends, or everybody has their sort of baseball game ritual. And mine I've adopted is drawing and sketching what's happening in the game. And that all came about through a really fortuitous friendship with the broadcaster for the San Francisco Giants, which is my home team. So I had a really great opportunity of drawing from the broadcast booth and sort of visual, I guess you would call it visual journalism, only my style is not very, it's not like a courtroom illustrator. It's, I don't know, to call it journalism would be like calling Looney Tunes documentary. But anyway, I started just really putting these things together and doing a lot of illustration work and storytelling of stories in baseball. And as I was sort of compiling all of these things together for a project, I had a kind of a weird realization that there were hardly any drawings of women, with the exception of maybe a few in the stands at the ballpark. And I've always been a visual learner, so it took me seeing it in front of myself to realize that it was just sort of a weird thing, particularly being a woman myself. So I started looking into some stories about women in baseball. I knew there had to be some, and I knew of the one, which the movie A League of Their Own is sort of everybody's go-to story about women in baseball. And I knew it had been based on a true story, although I was unsure how true. But I started looking into it, and I didn't have to look very far before I started finding these really great stories of these women. And then of course just opened up this whole world of women in baseball in general, going back to the 1800s, I mean to the beginning of baseball, and then going into the Negro Leagues and all over the world. But I had to hone in somewhere, and you know, I couldn't write an encyclopedia. I just wanted to write one book, so I had to pick one topic. But this was a good one, and a rich one, and a fascinating one. Not just because of the presence of women in baseball and their incredible stories, but also because of the time And there was so much going on at that time that really contributed to this being one of the more fascinating chapters in not just baseball history and women's history, but American history, global history. So I figured it was the best route to go, and I had a lot of fun with it.
Well, it's a wonderful book. It's a wonderfully presented book. The illustrations in there are very, I was saying off air, I love the visual style of it. It all seems very grounded in the era that the book is obviously telling about. You know, this kind of lots coming from, lots of influences from cartoons, but lots of influences obviously from media materials that were, you know, contemporary to the 1940s and 1950s. Can you talk a little bit about your influences on the illustrations in the style of the book?
Sure. Well, I think, you know, what's really great about this project is that when I pitched the idea and the publisher agreed to do it, it hadn't even occurred to me what a great match it would be visually, because my influences since childhood have really existed in this era. All my favorite things. I grew up just anytime anybody asked what I wanted to be when I grew up, I would say I want to be an animator for Disney. But what I wanted to be was an animator for Disney in the 1940s and the 1950s. And I wasn't really able to articulate that part until I got older and I looked into what that would entail. And I was like, oh, I don't want to do this anymore. I want to do it then. But, you know, Warner Brothers cartoons, UPA cartoons, Charles Schulz, you know, a lot of those and a lot of like classic comic strips were all the things that I just loved growing up. But everything I loved growing up was a good 30 to 50 years older than me. And I don't really know why. The only thing I can figure is maybe my grandfather, because I just idolized him and I liked everything he liked. But just that's just the way it was. And so anytime I ever came across an old magazine, like buried at my grandparents' house or at an antique store, and would start flipping through, I just love the fact that that time period used illustration as an advertising medium. And it was everywhere. Photographs were really just for journalistic, you know, for stories. And I just, there was something about all those styles that I don't know what it was. It just was nostalgic. It's hard to pinpoint, you know, I don't recall a moment where I ever said, I like that style, I want to go for that. I think it's just that I was a visual sponge. I liked what I liked, and I took it in, and it somehow found its way through what I did. And my grandfather was also a cartoonist, and his style was very similar to that sort of mid-century kind of graphic characters, the big, you know, angular things. And I think I was largely influenced by that as well. And so when I took this on, it just didn't even occur to me how much fun it would be. You know, I thought, thank goodness I didn't choose something from, you know, like psychedelic 70s. I'm not sure how that would have come out, because this very particular period is a period that I've always loved. So it worked out well.
Well, it's a really a match made in heaven, really, for the subject matter and the visual appeal. The way that the illustrations are in the book, it really works brilliantly with the context. And I want to come back to that a little bit. You know, the voices of these women who themselves participate in the league. How did you go about researching them and finding out what they had to say?
Well, fortunately, there are quite a few still living. Not too many. There were over 600 women that played throughout the duration of the league, and there are roughly about 70 estimated to be living. Of those 70, maybe 75% of them have been located or people know where they are, maybe even less than that, maybe about 70%. And then of those women, there are only a certain percentage that are still willing and able to talk about their experiences or in good enough health or memory, have the memory to talk about them. So with the help of the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League Players Association, they have an association that has been in existence since the early 80s, where the players themselves came together to, you know, they had reunions, and they organized to have a part of the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown dedicated to women in baseball and all that. So they've stayed with it for quite a while and kept these really great records. And there's a wonderful woman by the name of Mary Fidler who really helped me connect with the right players who might be available and willing to speak. So there were a lot of phone calls, which I feel like I'm a friendly person, but it's very much outside my comfort zone to cold call women in their 80s and 90s and ask them to talk to me. So, I really had to work with that, and I had to be bold and, kind and not freak them out, but I had to really go out of my comfort zone. And some of them just weren't available or didn't quite understand why I was calling. And only one or two were like downright grumpy and just hung up on me, but the rest were very sweet, very welcoming, very warm. And then a handful of women I was able to talk to in person at their reunion. I just went, I didn't know a soul, and I just went. I didn't know you could just kind of go, and I don't know if you can, but I did. I just went, and everybody was very welcoming and helpful. So I interviewed several women there, and then I was able to travel a little bit. I pretty much used my book advance to travel to interview these women and research some archives in the Midwestern U.S. And so I did that. And yeah, and then there's also a university that has been archiving these women. They interviewed a lot of these women back in 2009, 2010. And most of those women that are in that archive have since passed away. So that was a really great resource. They were very generous in letting me use those interviews for women, to include women in the book that had that were no longer with us, so we could have a broader idea and spectrum of the time frame too. Because a lot of the women who are still living, very few of them played when the leagues began in 1943, the early 40s. A lot of the women who are still living played in the later years. So it was important to me to get perspective on those early years. So those interviews were very important in getting those perspectives.
And did you feel, because like you said, you've mentioned already the film, that A League of Their Own, this is how most people come to their understanding of the league. But then that's pretty much where everything starts and stops, because outside of the film, there isn't a great deal of information about the league in the consensual knowledge or surrounding baseball. You really get the impression from the book, and it's partly to do with the actual advocacy of the women, the actual words, but it's also, I think, to do with the way that you link the pictures with the words and the way that it's all presented, that you're giving a voice to them, that there's a sense that they have been quite voiceless in the time since they're involved in the league. Did you feel a great sense of responsibility in providing them with an opportunity to have their voices heard?
I did at a certain point. It's so funny because I felt like I was really just sort of, the movie did an incredible job in giving them a voice, first of all, because they were legitimately voiceless until that point. These women didn't talk about it. The league folded and they just, they didn't have an opportunity to really talk about it. Or when they did, it was completely, nobody believed them. It was essentially completely unbelievable to say that I played professional baseball as a woman. And then there were also these weird stereotypes and things that came into play where women took on this role during World War II that was very progressive. And then as soon as it ended, they were sort of shoved back in to this role. And, publicity and propaganda, everything sort of almost overcompensated by making women feel like their value was really at home. So that really sort of pushed everything back into this cupboard where if you were to say something like that, then there must be something wrong with you, or you're, socially unacceptable in certain ways. So they just didn't talk about it. And then when the movie came out, suddenly people knew, and that created a totally different quality of life for these women. And I think through that, they themselves realized the value of what they had done. I don't know that they really understood the value of what they had experienced until someone told them how valuable it was. And then they started understanding in the scope of this new place we were at, how important it was. So, I feel like my role was really to just sort of collect these stories, as I always have, and present them in the way that I know how to do that helps create the feeling of it. Because I think particularly baseball, it's a lot of numbers, it's a lot of stats, and we have history and it's it, as information, but I think art has the wonderful power of creating a feeling and bringing that feeling and that spirit of something back to life, where it was just existing on a piece of paper, unless you're using words as your art form. But so I was just kind of having fun with it. I didn't really necessarily think of it as a responsibility until I realized that this hadn't really been done. There have been interviews, there have been academic books, but when I suddenly realized that this was like a new opportunity for girls and women to find out about this, because it's been so long since the movie came out, then yes, I did, but it was an honor. It wasn't necessarily scary. It just was, it made it all the more important to me to do it right. And, to be accurate, to tell things accurately, but also to just treat it, to talk about it from, a different perspective, to not get too involved on what my opinion is of anything, because it's very easy to do with a lot of these weird issues happening. It's easy to get involved in what I might think of something, but really ultimately, it doesn't matter. And I didn't experience it. So that was an interesting lesson in responsibility, that it's my responsibility to share these stories and impart the spirit of the league and what it stood for and what these women's experiences were and what it might've felt like. But I'm just, visually presenting their feelings, and I have to remove myself, and that was a real challenge because I feel very strongly about it. So
I definitely feel like you retain a sense of objectivity in the book. Going throughout the whole thing, there isn't this kind of underlying current of tension between the very fact that the women are being given the opportunity to participate in the league, and that's a fantastic thing, and that having baseball was something that was, you know, handed down almost from very high in the highest office, you know, something that the president at the time said, this is very important that we have baseball in some sense. And this notion that that's was a fantastic thing, but there was also this kind of underlying chauvinism, a kind of objectification of the women that was happening at the time. And perhaps to an extent, that's not massively surprising given the period. But the extent to which it was directed seems quite remarkable, to be honest. I'm thinking particularly of the lipstick rule and the rule precluding the wearing of any masculine attire. Can you describe some of the measures the league went to in order to make sure the women were like marketable, if marketable is the right word? And did you get the impression from your research and from talking to the women that the measures were more driven by the press or by perhaps the league?
Sure. Well, yeah, I mean, there was a great emphasis on femininity, right? You know, the uniform is the first example. It's really obviously not very practical to play hard-nosed baseball in a skirt. you know, the sliding and the, you know, they didn't play like they were playing in skirts, put it that way. So they were, you know, perpetually injured on their thighs, just raw skin all season long. And, you know, the lipstick, you know, they were fined if they weren't wearing lipstick on the field. So then a couple of them had really funny stories about being in the dugout and, you know, they knew they were next in the lineup to bat, or they were going to go in and sub for somebody who had just been injured, or, you know, ready to hit the field. Their mind is in the game, as an athlete's mind should be. And then they're stopped on the way out. Like, wait, be sure your lipstick's on. And a couple of them, relay these stories where they were stopped before they hit the field to be sure their lipstick was fresh. And they were just like, are you kidding me? Right. You know, their reaction was like, oh my, you know, it's just so jarring, and silly, but, yeah. And they were not allowed to wear, pants or shorts, during the season. If they were traveling on the road, they always had to be seen in a skirt or a dress. So even in the middle of the night, if they got off the bus to go, you know, to a rest stop or something, a lot of them would just pull their skirts on over their pants, which is funny, but that was the rule. And technically they weren't breaking it, I guess, if they were doing that. And they also had to take etiquette courses and practice their sort of decorum with the public, and just being ladylike in general was definitely a priority. The stories though, however, you know, it's really easy for us to call it chauvinistic, and it was, but I feel like that understanding of the word didn't even really exist at that point. That's just the way it was. So those things were driven by the league, but I think they were driven by the league as a result of social norms and social standards and what the media would be willing to accept. So Wrigley was a genius with marketing and media and all of that. And he knew that at that point in time, if it was going to get any exposure and publicity, if it was going to get the kind of publicity it would need to actually be successful, it would have to be palatable, and it would have to be something that the media was interested in and felt excited about promoting. And there was also, I think, a similar thing was happening in the UK at the time, where women, the WAC, and the, you know, the women were finally serving their country in some capacity, and that was a big step. But then with that came this sort of paranoia of masculinization of women, and that the roles would be skewed, and what would happen to home life, and it would just be like rampant lesbianism everywhere. And, you know, so I think that was another thing, that this was definitely not a feminine sport, and women had never ventured there. And where they had, it was not pretty. Like, there were softball leagues and things like that. But where women were participating in this level of athleticism with a rough sport was not something that the media would really give attention to. So while it's strange now and like almost inconceivable, I think it's very fair to say that it's really the only reason that it existed as long as it did. I don't know that it would have ever even happened if they didn't have that femininity angle at the time.
Sure. I mean, that said, despite those things that we've talked about, you know, there was a sense from the book of, you know, how empowered the players felt, you know, both during and then after participating in the league. There's a brilliant passage in the book that describes how only roughly 5% of the American women in the 1950s completed four or more years of college, but nearly half of all the women who played in the league went on to earn associates, bachelor's, master's and PhD degrees. How important do you think the league was in accelerating the opportunities for the women of the league?
Tremendous. I mean, 100%, because this was the other incredible thing, to Wrigley's credit, as a man working with men running these big corporations at the time, the progressive level of thinking, even if it was only for a business, you know, a business scheme or a something to supplement income while baseball was sort of not happening, even then, just to think of it as a marketable opportunity, he knew that if it was, again, if it was going to be the level that it needed to be successful, he had to get real athletes and make it a real thing and not just a novelty. So he offered really handsome salaries. These women were making more money playing professional baseball than men playing in the minor leagues. And one woman actually was offered a contract to play minor league men's baseball in the 50s. And she turned it down because, I mean, she enjoyed her position in the league and she could play with other women and all that. But it was, the money was significantly less than she was making playing for the Rockford Peaches. So they were making great money, and some of them making even more than their fathers were making working in the factories. They were certainly making more than they would have been making working in wartime factories. But they had no time to spend that money. So, you know, their schedules were incredibly rigorous. And then the off season, they had jobs. A lot of them even played softball on a softball or baseball league for a company. If, you know, the exchange was like, they'll give you a job and you get a salary and then you play on their team. So these women just were sort of raking in the dough and not spending it. And so when they had the opportunity to spend it, most of them chose to spend it on education or helped them get into some sort of place where they were able to get a higher position working someplace. So I thought that was really fascinating to me, that that is how a lot of them chose to spend their money. But I think the experiential education, you know, women were not leaving home. These women were all, you know, most of them from the Midwest. They're from all over the United States and Canada, and then also Cuba. But opportunities for women were very localized. And so for these women to jump on a bus or a train with a bunch of strangers and a bunch of other women and just travel around with no no parent or no husband, you know, the chaperone aspect was really what helped facilitate that. They were meeting people and going to places and having experiences that other women at that time just were not having on a regular basis. So, and they were allowed freedoms. I mean, despite the lipsticks and the skirt and the, you know, all that, they had autonomy that women of the time really didn't have also. So I think that was an empowering feeling of, you know, they wanted to see where that could go. So when they did have the opportunity to spend all that money, they went the route of education. And a lot of those women then went on to become things and do things that other women, you know, they were not just pioneers at that time playing baseball. They ended up being pioneers in all kinds of other things. One former player became the first woman sportscaster in Canada. You know, they just went on to do all kinds of incredible things because they had a jump start on all of that. And that was all thanks to doing what they loved to do, which I think is great. They didn't really have to like suffer through anything to get there. They just got to play baseball.
And given that some of the barriers for the role of women in American society have come down in the time since the end of the league, how surprising do you think it is that there's never been another women's professional baseball league? And perhaps as an addendum to that, what do you think the chances of there being one in the future are?
I think it's very surprising in that it's the American national pastime and that it happened and it worked. And then, you know, so it's weird. I think it's really weird that it hasn't caught on, particularly because other sports like soccer, football, and, you know, tennis and hockey, I mean, all these other sports, while the playing field is certainly not level, they have sort of they've developed into, there are now women's leagues and, you know, some of these women are paid to play these sports. So you would think that baseball would be the natural first. And it was, but then it wasn't. Not surprising in the fact that when Title IX passed in the United States, which basically freed up women to play sports on a collegiate level and, was the first real step toward equality for women in sports in the United States. It opened up the floodgates to a lot of things, and Little League Baseball is a huge institution in the United States. And there, as a result of this passing, you know, there were lawsuits that took place. One little girl in particular who wanted to play, and Little League said she couldn't, and there was this big back and forth. And basically, to avoid all these other lawsuits that would be coming up against them, they conceded and said, okay, yes, we will let girls play. But then they very quickly instituted softball over here and then baseball over here. So that's where it really started, because you know, I think it would be wonderful if a league existed anytime in the near future. And I do think it's very possible, particularly with what we're seeing now, but only just recently have there been fundamental, you know, opportunities created at an early age for girls to stick with baseball if they want to. Because really all the opportunity, once girls started playing softball, then when you get to junior high school, college, that's what they've been playing. So that's where the opportunities go. And there's just really never been an easy bridge. Girls who wanted to stick with baseball and decided to keep going that route really had an uphill battle the entire time. And they're always having to play with boys and men, which is fine and all, but not really sustainable for building a sport for women. So I think we're just now seeing it. There are a lot of incredible women who've started organizations for young girls and empowering them to stick to those opportunities and give them the opportunity to play with other girls. So I think while it would be great to see it happen really soon, I think these young girls right now that we're seeing playing baseball and sticking to it, I think they are the future of this. And those girls, I think, are going to be the possibility of that league happening again in, you know, next 15 years or so.
Yeah, well, it's great at least to see the seeds of change, to see the potential perhaps one day for there to be more to be professional baseball again in the US would be amazing. I'm thinking about wrapping up, Anika, but I wanted to say that the book is a massive achievement. It's highly engaging and it's informative and it's really, really good fun. What seems to shine through on every page is how much you've connected with the subject matter in a personal way. But I want to finish, if it's okay, with a bit of a left field question. I want to know what it's like to bring a book to publication during a global pandemic, because it can't have been easy.
It's a blast. Well, I was very fortunate that I had one event, my book launch event here in Nashville, which went very well and it was very fun. So at least I got a little taste of it. This is my first book, so I don't really have anything to compare it to, but I was really, really excited to get out into the world, because this, as you can imagine, was, I spent a lot of time alone making this book for about 3 years. So I was really excited to get out and meet people and talk about it and have these events. I was meant to throw out the ceremonial first pitch at a Yankees game this year, which now that won't happen. But so I guess it's kind of like getting ready to do your Olympic high dive and you just belly flop. But at the same time, I have nothing to compare it to. And I could have sat around and cried about it. But what ended up happening that's really interesting is a very quick realization that I'm not alone. And so there are several authors who had springtime is, of course, a good time to come out with a baseball book. Several of us coming out with baseball books who all had our events canceled, all had everything, you know, same thing. So we found each other and we've sort of come together and we formed what is officially known as the Pandeck Baseball Book Club. And we've sort of built a platform for promoting our books, but having conversations, and we're working on some other content now. And we've built links for our books that connect to independent bookstores, which obviously really need help now. And we wouldn't have really met one another otherwise. We've created a really unique and special community, and it's kind of got us to thinking, why don't people do this more often? We would have never thought to do this had this not happened, and it's really special. So we're hoping that we can create something that will sort of encourage authors of all genres to maybe participate in something like this after this has ended. So
fantastic. Again, there's potentially a good news story coming out of it. Well, thank you very much. As I said, it's a fantastic and highly entertaining read, and I think the book really deserving of a really wide audience. So congratulations. I really, really enjoyed reading it. And thank you very much for agreeing to talk to me today, Anika.
I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for the kind words and the support of the book. And it's been really fun talking with you. Thank you.
Welcome back. Hi, Leslie. Hi. And why don't you kick off again by telling us again all about your role at Sabre and the Women in Baseball Committee that you're involved with, and also perhaps how you came to hear about the book and what your first impressions of the book were.
Sure. So let me start. I'm Leslie Heafy. I'm a history professor at Kent State University. Been there for more years than I like to tell my students. So I'll just leave it at that. I am on the board for Sabre. I'm actually currently the vice president, and Sabre, for those who don't know, is the Society for American Baseball Research. I've been a member again for a long time. And while I initially joined because of my interest in the Negro Leagues, as a result of that, I also became interested in women's baseball. And Sabre has a Women in Baseball Committee that's been around since the late 1980s. I took over as the chair of that committee in 1995. And the simple goal of our committee is to promote people's research opportunities, but and also at the same time to help preserve the history of women in baseball in all aspects, not just, sometimes people think it's just baseball players, but it's in looking at any aspect of women in baseball. That's kind of how I fit in since I don't play. And so that's what I do for Sabre. And then your second question was Anika. Okay. So I was contacted by Anika few years ago, can't remember exactly when she was beginning to do the work in women's baseball and thinking about this book. I didn't know that the book was the end result when I first talked to her. But what I very quickly learned with Anika was in what she was doing, and it didn't matter whether it was just some artwork or whether it was ultimately what became the book, she was very interested in learning the history and wanting to make sure that she understood, that she got things correct when she talked about the league, because she wanted to make sure that the story she was telling was going to be the proper one to give voice to these women who she interviewed and had so many opportunities to talk to. And so ultimately that became, and the title is so apt because they are incredible women, and that is the title. And so she could not have chosen better. And it's a fantastic book. I that's just the simple words I can say. I couldn't wait till it came out when I knew she was done and it was going to be coming. It was, when is it coming? When is it coming? And when it finally arrived, I opened it up and said it was worth the wait. She did and delivered everything she said she was going to.
Yeah, it is an absolutely fantastic book. It's a real visual treat, apart from being a fantastic primer into the league itself. I think one of the things that we touched upon in the interview with Anika was this kind of wonderful marriage of her visual stylings from the 1940s and the 1950s, which marry really nicely with the subject matter, but also how it's not an illustrated history as such. It's a book that whose artwork kind of sit alongside the words. You know, the artwork helped to tell the story of the women, helped to tell the actual history of the league. And that's, for me anyway, unique in baseball books that I've, well, in fact, many, you know, books of any sort that I've been involved with as a reader. What did you think makes it so fantastic? Is there anything else to it than that, do you think, Leslie? Sure.
Oh, well, I think I would agree with you 100% on what you've said. And I would just simply say, for me, it's the combination also of all of that. It's the, there's just enough history in there to satisfy me, right? And it gives the background, it catches people's interest, but it's paired with artwork that is incredibly engaging. Just that in and of itself makes you want to pay attention. It tells a story, and then the words tell a story, and then you have, it's not just the history, it's the actual words from the women who played themselves, and it doesn't get better than that. So you hear what they were actually thinking, how they looked at various aspects of their time in the league, and then it's paired also with actual where she's done recreations of headlines from the newspapers and things like that. So all of the pieces, now the story doesn't get told without them all being there together. You can kind of look at it and feel like, oh, but no, they work incredibly well together as a whole. And so as a consequence of the way she's been able to put this together, you get a much more complete story. And it's not just, I guess it's not just the story, it's the feeling. And a lot of books don't do that for you.
No, definitely. You said something when we didn't record, unfortunately, a few minutes ago in our first chat, Phil, about the visual styles and what you thought of them.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with. No, I couldn't agree more with both of you. Really, I think it's an excellent book, and unlike one that I've ever come across before. Not just in terms of the topic, in terms of the history, but in terms of how the illustrations work with the text. And I think that you could do an analysis of this book in a whole other separate podcast, just talking about the illustrations and the kind of Hanna-Barbera style that the book has and the influences behind the illustrations. When I first came across it, I knew that it was illustrated. I expected it almost to be a graphic novel, and there are like a few kind of comic book style elements to it, but it really isn't. And I don't know what I'd call it. I'd probably call it an illustrated scrapbook of baseball memories or something like that. But it's really unique and like something I've never come across before.
I think you touched on something there with the scrapbook idea. I think it's as if it's just a collection of memories for a lot of the women and giving voices to a lot of the women, which works really, really well. I think for me, what really struck me about about Anika's illustrative style is that it's like she said in her chat, you know, so rooted in that visual style of the 1940s and 1950s, which if you think about baseball and, you know, outside of women's baseball, outside of the Women's Professional Baseball League, Girls Professional Baseball League, was that this is, for a lot of people, the real glory days of baseball. You know, this is a real time when baseball was at its peak, you know, into the 1950s with those great Yankee sides into the 1950s. It kind of fits with a lot of nostalgia, but it's not treacly. It's lots of angular imagery, which I think is just really, really strong. I just think there's so much about it that works really, really well.
Well, you know exactly the time period it was written.
Absolutely, yeah.
That's what I mean by it has the feel and the look and not just the words, which is so unusual.
Yeah, definitely. But it doesn't, it's not shoehorned in. It feels very organic. And it's interesting because hearing Anika talking about her own style that she had before coming to the writing the book, you know, this is something, there's just this sort of a match made in heaven, really. Her illustrations and her style with the subject matter, it just works very, very well together. One of the things I'm quite interested to hear about from you, Leslie, is some of the details from that period. You know, why was it, perhaps you could tell us why the league came to an end, some of the factors involved in unfortunately there not being any professional baseball for women since 1954.
Sure. Well, I think everybody automatically goes to the money and thinking about the lack of resources. And I would say, yeah, that's true. But I would also say that was always true from the very, very beginning of the league to the end. So to me, that's not really necessarily the primary factor. Wrigley himself, when he attempted to start the league, had to put up his own money because there just wasn't any, they didn't have the resources of big stadiums to play in, things like that. But that was always true. So for me, that's never been really the big issue. I think more importantly, the demise of the league is much more due to the introduction of television. I see the introduction of television because suddenly people have a choice, right? And when you're given that choice, particularly in that time period, though I think even today that might still hold true. If you got the choice between sitting in your home and watching the New York Yankees or going to the local park to watch the Rockford Peaches play the South Bend Blue Sox, which were most people going to do? They went to television, and television had that impact on not just the women's league, but other semi-pro and amateur kinds of things that just when people had choice. And so, and of course, to many of them, their vision of what baseball was supposed to be was Major League Baseball, right? That was the thing. And so why would you watch, and I hate to use this word, but a substitute or settle for something that wasn't, in their view, as good as, if you could watch the real thing? And, you know, if you could watch, Don Larson, as opposed to, right, people are going to do that. As that's what they recognized. That's what they wanted. After all, Wrigley started the league to keep baseball interest going until Major League Baseball came back. And so when Major League Baseball comes back and then comes back in the fashion on television, right, which takes it, the league is no longer fulfilling a need. That need isn't there anymore. And so it faded away. There just wasn't the support for it, and I would argue the need.
And men's professional baseball in the immediate after war years came back very, very strong as well. So, and obviously you had the integration here as well in the aftermath. So there are perhaps a number of factors why it didn't happen for the Women's Professional League after 1954. But is there an argument that Major League Baseball could and should have done more in the period since then?
Sure. Absolutely. But at the same time, I think there's a variety of ways to look at the time period, because we're talking since 1954, right? And so in the immediate aftermath of the league declining and going out of existence, I don't know that there was a lot that Major League Baseball, I mean, I hate to say this, but without the right leadership could have done, simply because of attitudes of society towards women's roles. We were talking about this a little earlier, the idea that, you know, this was never supposed, in most people's view, was never supposed to be permanent. It's the Rosie the Riveter kind of idea, right? There's a need, you fill it. And when that need is, you go back to the way things used to be. And the way things are supposed to be is women are supposed to stay at home, they take care of the kids, they do, right? There weren't a whole lot of even opportunities in the mid-50s for women to enter and this, people are going to take this the wrong way as soon as I say it, but to enter the workforce in large and in varieties of opportunity. That's what they were pushing for. And so Major League Baseball was up against those kinds of things and really not in any position, I don't think, or any interest to necessarily push that, particularly when Major League Baseball was doing well, right? If something, a typical attitude, if something isn't broken, why do you try to fix it, right? And so there really wasn't that need. To your point about integration, right, in the immediate aftermath, Major League Baseball was also dealing with that major change. You know, Robinson comes in 47, but it's not till 1960 till every major league team has at least one African-American player on the team, right? 1959. And so as is typical in American history, we've often seen race and gender come together. And if people have a choice, they don't go after both, because it's almost as if, well, we only have enough bandwidth, stamina to deal with one issue and the other will take away from it. And so Major League Baseball, right? African-Americans. Well, yes, they're African-American, but at least they're men. I mean, I hate to say it, but right. And so in the immediate aftermath, I mean, they missed an opportunity, I guess, when Eleanor Engel came through and they booted her out and said no. But the really, I think where they missed an opportunity, the first one was in the 1970s, right, with Title IX, because that opportunity came along. Little League had a chance to do something, and that's not Major League, but that's organized baseball. And what did they do? They did the simple thing. They did the easy thing. Ooh, we'll create softball leagues, and we'll just say that's where the girls could go play. And it's under Little League, so it's organized. They get the same, right? It's the same. It's that separate but equal kind of idea, right? And so they missed that opportunity. Then you jump forward into the 1990s, and I think they really missed an opportunity when the Colorado Silver Bullets were put into place, right? And nothing followed up. And again, that was monetary resources, I think, were the big issue. For the first time, I think now, in the last few years, last 4 to 5, baseball from Major League Baseball on down is finally beginning to recognize that there is opportunity here. And they've started to do things with their Trailblazer series and with Grit and some of the others. And so the key here is to not let that opportunity go and to keep the momentum moving forward. And right now, Major League Baseball seems interested in doing that.
Yeah, good. I mean, it's something we hope to see in the future. I know from talking to other people on the podcast, women involved in baseball who feel like things are perhaps moving in the right direction right now. So that is good news to hear. I mean, I'm quite interested. We've talked about the role of women a little bit and about how there was this suppression or resuppression of with women in the immediate post-war period, not just in America, but across the West. But yet these pioneering women who were involved in the league, who then, after leaving the league, then become real pioneers as well in areas such as, you know, some of these women who went into quite high positions in law and in medicine and in education. You know, these were women who were trailblazers, initially trailblazers in baseball and then trailblazers across the rest of society. I mean, do you... One of the things I'm really surprised about from researching a little bit more into the girls or the women of the AAGPBL is why it took them such a long time into the early to mid 80s to come back to the league and to come back to the fold, as it were. You know, why do they come back and reconvene and the development of the players association? Right. And why did it take such a long time for that all to happen, do you think?
I think primarily, you know, the early to mid 80s seemed like a perfect time for a variety of things to happen. And I think probably the biggest one is the position in life that many of these women were in by that point, because they had reached a stage in their life where their kids were grown, their careers were taking either retiring or taking a different direction. And they finally had time and interest to necessarily devote to something that many from the outside might have looked at as a hobby and not really something serious, because that wasn't baseball after all. But, you know, Anika tells that story of the mom, you know, with her son teaching him, and his reaction is kind of, how does mom know how to do this? They didn't talk about what they had done to anybody, because it just, life sort of went, once the league is gone, it almost feels like as was intended, I think, by society, that life went back to normal, right? And so until there was an opportunity, and so you hit the mid-80s, and you've got women in a different position in their lives, maybe. You've also got Title IX has been around now for just over a decade, and so there are significant changes that are taking place in terms of opportunities for women. So I think the idea that it wouldn't be seen maybe necessarily as separate and as different. And then right around that same time, you've got Penny Marshall doing her research for the movie, which put her in contact and obviously put some of these women in contact with one another for the first time in many cases since the league ended. And then the Hall of Fame follows by opening up their exhibit in the early 90s, which meant that they were doing research in the late 80s, right, to find these women, to gather their stories. And that, in that particular case, took a particular individual, Tim Wiles, who was the librarian at the Hall of Fame at the time, who had a particular interest in learning about these women and tracking down their stories. So suddenly their memories are being sort of revived. And I don't think any of them really understood, and nor would you expect them to, at the time when the league ended, that this was going to be it. Obviously, nobody saw into the future and didn't realize that this was it for 50 years or 60 years. And so they didn't have any idea what they had done was pioneering, right? That what they had done. And so in the 80s, when all of these little pieces start to, I think some of them began to realize when they looked back, wow, there hasn't been anything. We were unique. And so I think all of that comes together in the mid-80s. And we're thankful for that today, because otherwise we still might not be where we're at today without that. In some ways, maybe they were pioneers twice.
Yeah, sure. And in the fields of their professions that they went into as well, you know, there was...
Absolutely. Yeah.
So one of the things that's quite interesting, if we're talking about the present day, is that the role of women in baseball is still not particularly great. You know, there are women involved in baseball in front offices and even on coaching staffs of big league teams now as well. But you know, could the game, could the sport, could the league, could the teams, could everybody be doing more to support women in baseball in 2020?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the simple answer is yes. How you do that is the not so simple answer, right? I think they could be doing a great deal more to expand on what they've done with the Trailblazer series and the Grit series, because those have only been opportunities for a small group of elite players, essentially, right? It brings together, and that's not knocking it, but it only brings together, you know, 40 to 60 girls to play in a very short tournament, and then it's done. And then they go back to, right? And so building on those opportunities, creating more of those kinds of opportunities, I think Major League Baseball has taken a giant step forward with their diversity committee and their diversity initiatives, and including women as part of that, both in the office itself and in everything now that they do, all the educational opportunities for students, internship programs, things like that. They automatically now include women. Even at the winter meetings in December, I think this was either their third or fourth year that they actually have an entire sessions devoted to women's participation and opportunities. And so they need to build on those kinds of starts and initiatives. And I think Major League Baseball and Minor League Baseball could work together a little bit more to support in the local communities. Because I think making people aware that these opportunities exist is part of it. Talking earlier, thinking about this idea, if you don't see somebody doing what you want to do, you're not going to do it, right? You're not going to think that you can. You're not going to realize those opportunities are out there. Being the first or the first among men is not easy, and not everybody can take that path. And so this is where the leadership of an organization like Major League Baseball is so important. They could look to the WNBA, they could look to soccer leagues, they could look to other, to sort of model themselves after things that have been fairly successful yet, and kind of learn from those and say, okay, here's what worked, here's what didn't, and develop. But I think the big thing is not to lose the momentum that has started, because I think there, this is the best opportunity we've seen in the last 2 or 4 years.
And if you were to put best case scenario hat on, what are we, what could we be looking at conservatively?
Wow. Well, I have my wish and I have my, you know, that's a tough one. I would think if they did things in a real concerted fashion and really followed up and put effort in, particularly on the playing side, right? Because I think there's different scenarios for all the different aspects of women's involvement. But if we stick just to the playing side for a moment, the idea of development is key, right? And so that takes time. And so even if you were to start with the kids that were playing in the Trailblazer series right now, right? They're in just barely in high school. And so look down the road, you're talking 10 to 15 years.
Sure.
Of consistent, because part of the problem, and I didn't mention, is right now, okay, so they get to play in those series, and even if you develop things at that level, here's the, but there's the missing piece that hasn't been solved yet at all, and that's the college years.
Sure.
Because, okay, so they play in high school, and they find a team that lets them play, there might be multiple girls that get these opportunities and some of the tournaments and things like that, and then college comes along, and the only scholarships out there are softball. And so they stop, they play softball. And then you have to start all over, because contrary to what lots of people think, softball and baseball are not the same game. And so on the playing side, I'd like to, I'd say that if we were to continue, I don't think 15 years is outside the realm of possibility at all. Now, some people would say, you know, we need it sooner than that. I agree, but you've also got to develop, and we're developing slowly. So being realistic. Some of the other areas where women participate, I don't know, because that's also changing attitudes and changing cultures. And you know, the one where they lag the most is not, I think, in even in personnel and on the field, it's umpires.
Right.
Because that's an area where there's little to none happening.
And which area of baseball do you think is doing best in terms of promoting promoting opportunities for women? Is that the media, do you think?
Well, the media has finally caught on because all of the, you know, you mentioned earlier the hiring of some women coaches. There's women who are announcers. All of the people know about them because the media picks up on these stories. And so the media has done better, but the media needs to continue to do better and continue to tell these stories, because that's the only way people hear about them. But I would argue, and I say this a lot to people, there's also an element where we need to reach a point where the media in particular doesn't continue to constantly see these women as exceptions. Because I argue, I fully believe that as long as you see something as an exception, it's always going to be an exception. And so at some point, we have to start talking about it more as it's just the way things should be, and not these are exceptions and these are exceptional. And oh, this only because this person, this woman is able, right? That doesn't open up opportunities for others.
When women aren't noticed for being women, they're noticed for doing their jobs. Sure. I understand what you're talking about.
And that, unfortunately, we have not reached that point, and maybe we never will, but I think that's absolutely key to, and we have to talk about it that way.
Absolutely. Going back to the book, because we've said since the beginning, really, that this book serves as a really strong, excellent primer on the league. But one of the things about it that's makes it accessible is that it's not completely exhaustive. You know, it touches on things, and it touches very well on things, but it doesn't go into great depth on all areas. Are there any events or stories that it doesn't detail that you think are significant to helping to understand the league and the era in baseball, and perhaps even wider American society?
I think overall she captures most topics I was expecting to see. And I think the key that what you said, she touches upon. It's not an in-depth look. So for me, being the historian, right, I look at it as, okay, she touched upon all the key things, right? So she touched, but I think that's what makes her book so fascinating is I don't think she really missed at least bringing up most of the thing topics. So she talks about Wrigley and why he got it started. She talks about the issue of the charm school and the uniforms in great debt, right? And so that gives you a look into the attitudes of the time period. She gives you some of that through the player's own words. She talks about the issue with the women from Cuba. She talks about the issue right at the very end, but she does address it, of African-American women, right? And that's an important part of that story. She talks even about their trip to Cuba. That was one I would have liked to see, but it's there. There's barely a mention of their traveling teams and the rookie teams and things, which is something, but like any good book, you put out a... But I don't think there's much that she missed mentioning with the idea that you read about it and you say, oh man, I want to go learn more, right? And they're going to be able to learn more. So they're going to go and be able to learn more about Toni Stone and maybe Johnson and Connie Morgan, three women who ended up in the Negro Leagues. They're going to go be able to read about Bill Allington's All-Stars and the traveling, because she mentions them. She even, I thought, did a marvelous job of introducing through two of her graphics in there, the changes in the league from like ball size and things, so people could understand how it worked, but just enough that that's the kind of stuff that sometimes can overwhelm people, but there's enough there so that you realize, oh, okay. So it wasn't the same the entire time, right? She mentions the chaperones, who are a fascinating part of the story, because those ladies, one of the things she doesn't mention, which I think is really cool, is the number of those women who were the chaperones who had actually served in the volunteers in the military during World War II, which is part of the reason they were picked to be the chaperones. And then, of course, had to put up with some of the prankster and jokes and things of the, which also gives you a real human feel to these girls and young ladies out on the world who are also just, that's who they are, right? So sure, I think sure. You get a little bit of all of that from this book.
Absolutely. Is it, Phil, anything that you would have liked to have seen? We've perhaps established that nothing's missed, but is there anything you would like to have seen a bit more of?
No, I think one of the things I like about the book is that at the back, she lists like lots of websites and resources that you can go and explore and find out more information about some of the people, some of the stars, some of the events that she writes about in the book. I lost a day at the weekend just spending time going through each of those links. And I found that I don't think I scratched the surface, barely scratched the surface on it. But I thought it was really helpful that she lists resources that you can use to go and explore in your own time.
Yeah, I mean, it will serve definitely as a resource to go and find out more about the league and some of the people involved in the league, because it's a really, really interesting subject. And like, I don't think have even scratched the surface in this podcast about the book and the period of history either. So we are going to have to leave it there, though, I think, unless there's anything particularly pressing anyone wants to add just before we log off.
I would just like to say thank you and just encourage people who are listening to pick up the book. I think if you just pick it up and open it up, you will be hooked and you will want to look at it. You'll want to learn, and you'll learn about an incredible period in our history. But more importantly, you'll read about some incredible women who have played incredible roles in our history that just have not gotten the attention that they deserve. And this book helps to bring that. And so I just encourage people to open it up and take a look at it.
Definitely. Yeah. I'll reiterate that. It's a fantastic book. You should buy it, and you should buy a copy for a friend as well, because it's that kind of book. It's a really nice gifting book as well, I think. Yep. It's a really, really nice book. It's really well put together. Book. I realize I said the word book about seven times in a row, but never mind. Okay. Well, we'll stop there. Thank you very much again, Leslie, for coming on.
And my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
I'll put in the show notes as well some of the places where people can find you and find out more about your work as well.
Thank you.